This podcast is proud to be part of the TalkSport Fan Network.
TalkSport. Powered by fans.
The TalkSport Fan Network is proudly supported by McDelivery, bringing you the food you love. McDelivery brings a top-tier lineup of food right to your door. No matter the results, you'll always be winning with McDelivery. Order now on the McDonald's app and you'll get rewards points delivered too, so that ordering today means some tasty rewards for tomorrow. Only via app at participating restaurants. 18 plus rewards registration required. Points only on menu items, delivery fee and terms apply. See mcdonalds.com.
The TalkSport Fan Network is proudly teaming up with Three for Mental Health Awareness Week this year. Beyond the pitch, beyond the results, we're here to connect fans, getting them to embrace the highs and lows of supporting your club, because we're not just fans, we're a team. With 2 in 3 football fans having struggled with their mental health, we understand that life off the pitch can present its own challenges. That's why we're committed to ensuring you have the tools to stay connected with your friends and fellow supporters. Take a moment to connect with your mates. A simple text or an open conversation can make a world of difference. And if they don't respond right away, don't hesitate to follow up. Let's all take a moment to talk more than football.
Brentford FC, come on, come on, you Brentford, come on, you bees, come on, you Brentford, come on, sit back your
bed. This is the besotted Pride of West London podcast. We're coming to you probably a day late, but it's been a busy old week. I can't believe it seems like the week has been a month, if I'm honest with you. Yeah, 2 podcasts last week. We did the Ivan Tony special, and then we did like the weekly one. Secondly, the post-match against Crystal Palace and the post-match against Newport County. And it's just been a bit of a blur. So, Thursday night out for a Friday morning go live, I think, is the order of the week this week. It's just been crazy that Ivan Tony was such a big storm last week, but it seems to have all died down a little bit. He's signed to a new agency as well, which was the late news after the Diary of a CEO podcast. So, it ramped up even more the talk about him wanting to go on going, and you know, this will be his last year at the club, and he'll probably go in January. Anyway, enough of all that. We've got a really busy one tonight because we're on transfer deadline. Anyone that's put Sky on or anyone that's listened to Radio 5, you're just going to get blown away with news about transfers. It's going crazy out there, and it's going crazy in TWA as well. Some of the bids that have gone in over the last couple of weeks have been eye-watering. I never thought I'd see these numbers in my lifetime, but you know, that's where we're at now. We're at the best league in the world, and we're surrounded by some of the best players in the world, and the transfer fees are hugest in the world, astronomical. So we just had a bid of €34.2 million put in for Johan Bakayoko from PSV Eindhoven. That seems to be gathering pace. We'll see. We'll see if that comes over the line, but there's other transfer speculation we'll talk about in a little bit. So lots to talk about tonight, and I'm Dave Lane, and joining me tonight we have Mark Bonner. How are you, Mark?
Hi, good everyone. Yeah, nice to be here.
Nice to have you on board again. And Charlie Briggs. Charlie, how's things with you, buddy?
All good, mate. All good. Yeah, excited for the Bournemouth game. So got to get through the rest of the week first, but no, very excited.
Yeah, that's almost like the Bournemouth match is almost like a sidetrack to what else is going on, because we're going to look back in a minute to the Crystal Palace game, but Bournemouth is, you know, a real opportunity to put kind of a couple of results right. I think we sort of the consensus after the game on Saturday just gone was there was 2 points dropped, and you know, at Newport, though it's difficult to kind of work out really, you know, how good or how bad are you playing when you change so many team players, you know, we really made hard work of that. But we'll, you know, let's actually just go back to Crystal Palace, because we started off that game, I thought, really, really well, in a really positive mindset. We had you know, Sharda playing in his number nine role. Really super excited about seeing how he develops. And he capped a really great first half with a really superb goal. Talk us through that goal, Mark, because we'd waited a while for him to score, and we've waited for him to kind of fully seize his opportunity, because he's come in with you know, a lot of potential, and that he's another Brentford signing, isn't he? He's one of those that we're going to kind of turn into, you know, a much more improved version of how he arrived. But that was some statement, wasn't it, Mark?
Yeah, no, it was a fine finish, wasn't it? I mean, he picked the ball up, didn't he? Wide on the left, he just, you know, head down. He just seemed to sort of tear towards the penalty spot, didn't he? Bit of twisting and turning, got the ball on his right foot, and he absolutely lashed it into the far left side of the net, didn't he? Beyond the keeper, and you know, it was a fine curving finish, really. I was really pleased for him. I mean, you could see the determination in the run and in the finish. I mean, it felt like he leapt, you know, twice his own height in the air to sort of celebrate, didn't he? And it was a great goal, great first goal. And I've got a really good feeling about him. I think he's going to be a really fine player for us. I mean, he's a young lad. He's got good attitude. He was great in the interview. So, yeah, I'm just excited about it, really. I mean, seeing him start through the middle is exciting, but actually he picked the ball up sort of in the Ollie Watkins position, didn't he? And, you know, it felt like they were all moving around up there in the first part of that game, actually quite a fluid front three, which I'm quite excited about. I actually think all three of them can play through the middle, so it's interesting. But in the end, I think, you know, come January, we're going to see Sharda through the middle, aren't we?
Yeah, it looks that way. And you mentioned his celebration there, and we have to tip our hat to Lloyd Owusu, because I texted Lloyd Owusu at half time and said, "Lloydie, did you copyright your raising the roof?" Because I guess everyone that's listening to this has seen how Sharda celebrated. He did the Lloyd Owusu, both hands above his head and pumping up and down, really like pushing the roof up. And Lloyd Owusu used to do that. He did it for several years, and then he came back for a second term at the club, and we saw the same celebrations once or twice. Not as prolific as he was the first time, but you know, he will always have a special place in the hearts of Brentford fans of that era. The late 1990s were kind of Lloyd's time. And you know, anyone that was at Cambridge for the final day of that season, when he scored the goal that took us up as champions, again, you know, it was a day that still makes the hairs on my arms stand on end. You know, we're in a completely different ballpark now, literally. So, Charlie, you know, did you, you know, after we'd gone a goal up, were you expecting us to kind of build on that? Because that's what it felt like to me.
Yeah, definitely. I agree with you. I thought we started really well, which actually has been a bit of a theme of us in the Premier League. I think we tend to sort of have a superb first 20 minutes and then things kind of tail off towards the back end of a first half. But yeah, I thought we'd press on. I think Palace, all of those teams I'm always a bit cautious of. I think we consistently draw 1-1 with them. So I think I was probably going into the game, to be honest, expecting a draw. And they played so well against Arsenal Palace that, you know, a fight back wasn't at all kind of impossible. But I agree. I think we were in the position to have won the game. I think their goal was just rather scrappy. It was a bit frustrating one to concede. I've watched the replay a couple of times. I still don't really know what happened. Looks like a bit of confusion between Flecken and Collins, but it happens. And actually, it's quite a good finish from Anderson under Flecken's legs. But yeah, I was expecting to go on and win it. But, you know, it's Crystal Palace. I think we can get carried away, but they're a strong side. They look bloody good against Arsenal. And yeah, whilst it feels like 2 points dropped, I think, to be honest, I'd have taken a point at the start of the game.
Yeah, I agree. You couldn't really point the finger at anyone. I've looked at it and thought, Collins should have just, instead of jumping over it, should have just hoofed it out. But you know, it was all three of them kind of converged at the same time. And obviously, you want someone to do something, but you know, it, on another day he doesn't go, you know, Anderson gets his toe to it and it you know, goes straight into the keeper's shins or something. But for it, you know, it was just a bit of a lucky sort of break for them. But in the end, did you think we were kind of hanging on for the point? I know we pushed on a little bit more after they'd equalised, but once we conceded, I felt that we could concede again. They obviously had a little more belief about them. So was a point kind of fair result in the end, or was it definitely 2 points dropped for us, Mark?
I think we were quite flat in the second half, to be honest. I mean, I think probably for 25 minutes, if not 30, really they had the better of the second half. And, you know, we were hanging in there a bit. The goal felt like it was coming, felt like they were going to equalise, and we only really picked it up in the last 7-8 minutes, really. So actually, to me, it was a clear Palace second half, really. I felt we were quite lacklustre for most of that second half. I was disappointed in the performance, really, in the second half, because the game was there, it was totally 3 points available to us, and, you know, it's disappointing, really. So, yeah, I mean, I just felt Palace were on it. I think Roy, you know, made a couple of good substitutions, got them going. They came out strongly, and I think they just got the better of us, really, for a large chunk of that second half.
Yeah, so let's go back to the terraces, the post-match vibe briefly, and hear what the Brentford fans thought after the 1-1 draw against Crystal Palace.
I'm a bit flat after that, Laney, to be honest. First half was good. Probably need to get that second goal, which we didn't, but didn't carve out enough, really. A good goal from Sharda, but again, didn't show as much maybe as we'd like. And I thought we sort of lost our way in the second half and gave them too much possession, and they got some good play. I'll have to see the goal again. Can't comment on the goal. Looked a bit scrappy, and then, you know, finally at the end when we did go for it, we looked like we could score. You know, another couple of minutes, I think we probably would. Whistle was quiet today. Didn't really get a chance. They did a job on Brian. I thought their tactics were quite good. They did a job on Jensen. You know, crazy when he got the ball, but they closed him quickly. But Brian didn't get a lot of time on the ball either until the end when he broke through. But, you know, it's okay, right? It's okay, but it's not.
I think it's 2 points dropped if you consider the first half, where I thought we were a better team. But second half, they really came us. I thought they were a very good second half. And I really, really do like their two centre-backs, Anderson and Gouye. You're not going to beat Anderson in the air. Gouye on the ground is superb. I think they're two really good centre-halves. I've always liked them. Yeah, I think the 1-1's probably deserved. Literally, first half we were better, second half they were better.
Second part of the second half where they could have, you know, they were putting us under it a little bit. And so, I suppose you look at that and think maybe it's a point gain, but definitely 2 points dropped for me, because I just think they're quite a cynical side, Palace. You know, they're quite a dull side to watch apart from the front three. And I don't think we were given any favours by the referee, who didn't seem to lose track of what the rules actually were a lot of the time. And that affects you when you're playing football. You know, you don't know what you can do and what you can't do.
That was a battle for a team between teams who will finish at the end of the season between 8th and 12th in the league. And probably that was a fair scoreline reflection. I mean, looks we'll have to see on match of the day what happened with the goal, because it was a long way. It was at the other end of the ground. But it looked like it did go through Flecken's legs. But did it get a deflection or not? Too early to say. We'll have to see what it does. Charlie looked good today when he was on the pitch for the 70 minutes. Great, great goal. And hopefully that will give him all the encouragement in the world that he needs to go on.
I thought we faded quite badly in the second half. I can't argue with the draw. It was the right result. I mean, watching the goal back, yeah, you were right. I thought it was a tackle that turned into a shot, but it's not. It's Collins jumps it, thinking the keeper's going to get there, and neither of them quite get there, and Anderson just rolls it under them. But before that, you know, Flecken saved the free kick. Brilliant save, by the way. And then the double save, even better. So, you know, and then puts to bed any doubts about Flecken, people expressing. But, you know, when you look at the bench today, when you look at the players who aren't available at the moment, I mean, when Jensen goes off, we lose control of the midfield, we lose control of the match. Damsgaard's the natural sub, he wasn't available. And a bunch of other players, Baptiste, De Silva, who are out. this is the difference between draws and wins with this team. We use our subs normally. We bring four or five on and that gets us over the line. We didn't have the subs to do it today, and that's why we faded and sort of lost control of the match. It's the El Drorico episode 5. I predicted it before the game. Of course we drew with Palace.
But I just felt today was like a game where I thought Palace are, I think they're a bog standard physical Premier League side with a manager who was quite happy for them to play that way. And the first half proved we are better than Crystal Palace. The second half, we kind of played as if we thought we weren't better than Crystal Palace. We let Palace score, and then we have a bit of a huff and a puff at the end, and it just feels to me like it was a big opportunity lost. I think you take 3 points today, and you sort of stamp your authority a bit, don't you?
There you have it. Pretty much everyone's on the same wavelength there. It was a mixture of a bit of frustration and just a little bit of kind of what might have been, I think, because you know it'd been such a positive week the week before, you know, at Fulham away. We all hoped that we could kind of build from that, and just that would give us a confidence and spur us on to another 3 points. And obviously, you know, we've all said, didn't we, that Palace seemed to be the team that we're kind of tied to. We can't really beat them, and they can't really beat us. But we actually think we're probably a better team than them, and I don't think there's much of a probably about that, to be honest. I think we are, but they just seem to have a lot more kind of maybe experience, and they know how to grind out a result. That's why they've been in this league for as long as they have, so 11th or 12th year. So they're certainly no mugs, and that took us into. Tuesday night's trip down to South Wales, because that was a real old school Brentford away day. There was a really good Brentford turnout going across the Severn Bridge and into Newport. So it's a journey we know a lot of us have made several times, to Somerton Park and this time to Rodney Parade. We were looking back to a great cup game against Newport when we beat them in the Freight Rover Trophy at Griffin Park, a packed Friday night it was at Griffin Park in 1985. We won 6-1, was it 6-0, 6-1. Gary Roberts scored a hat-trick either side of half-time, and it was one of the last times I remember seeing the Royal Oak packs, and it was just a really great atmosphere, an early kind of experience of, you know, it felt like the big time, but little did we know that we were going to get to Wembley and roll over to Wigan. So yeah, going to Newport was very nostalgic, I'd say. We had a really good day out, really good turnout of bees, as I said, and our crew, there was yeah, loads went, and people went on a lot of work meetings that people were calling in South Wales. I don't know, it was just coincidence, I think, but there was a lot of plotting up that was going on just to make sure that they could get there without taking time off work. And we all stayed in the same hotel, and it ended up being quite a messy Tuesday night. So to be encouraged to go there again. And the reward was to play Arsenal at our place, which is a mouth-watering one. But the game itself, I don't think Brentford really did themselves a lot of justice. Again, it seemed to be we were still in the Crystal Palace mode. Loads of changes. It was a very, very experimental team. We brought some big guns on towards the end, which looked like it pushed us over the line, but they took us to penalties. What did you two make of the game, Mark, from your point of view? Did you think there was a chance of us going out at one stage?
Definitely, 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 definitely. It was a Rotherham game last season, wasn't it? It had that feeling about it.
Oh, Gillingham.
Gillingham, that's right. Gillingham at home. It had that feeling about it, you know, going all the way to Pens. And I just felt I agree that we just carried on in that same vibe that we had in the second half against Palace, even though there were a bunch of changes. But I don't know, I just felt that we were quite flat. I mean, on commentary, the game sounded, you know, Newport were bang up for it. The crowd were up. And they were very partisan, the crowd. It was really making me smile on commentary. You know, there was a lot a lot of difficult stuff, but for good old Mark Burridge to kind of try and cover over, it was a lot of fruity language. But it was, like you say, it was a real old school game, and brought back a lot of nice memories for me. I also remember that Freight Rover semi as well. And yeah, I just felt, you know, we were a little bit flat. There were a lot of changes, as you say. We never really got to grips with it. Felt like one of those games where there was a lot of head tennis. Newport were just quite up and at us, really. But, I mean, I was pleased to see Jensen bundle it in, you know, with a couple of minutes to go. But I never felt like it was classic Brentford stuff. I never felt like we'd, you know, it was over, because, you know, they were still pouring forward.
Yeah, well, you probably heard and saw a lot more than I did, because the floodlights were so awful. I said it on the post-match. I literally couldn't see a lot of the time. And, you know, when the ball went up in the air, you literally lost it. You lost the ball. And that was just from, you know, I'm sure, hopefully they could see a little bit more on the pitch. If they didn't, it might explain quite a lot. But Charlie, the starting lineup, you know, Ellery Ball coming goal, left back was Christopher Ayer, which was unusual. Ben Mee and Zanka as the centre backs, Roslev on the right, Yarmolek and Vitaly Yanel and Frank Onyeka as the midfield, and then Olakigbe and Sharda and Lewis Potter on the wings. Did you think that there should have been enough about us to have won this without sort of going to, you know, added time?
I think on paper, yes. But I think I've been through this so many times in Brentford. I think it's strange, the cup, because as soon as the first round comes out and we get one of these slightly lower level teams, it's always seen as a really good chance to see some of the slightly more kind of, well, players that play less, essentially, the squad players. Also, some youth players coming through. I know, I'm sure you two, Olakigbe, I thought looked absolutely fantastic in pre-season. So I was really excited, knew that he'd start. But it seems to be the way that quite often when you have these sort of squads where there's big rotation, it is just quite hard to get going. It's players who haven't really played together that often. No one particularly knows what their role is in the team. And, you know, we were missing some big players. I think it's always going to be difficult going into a game with essentially a completely new back four, new goalkeeper. There's a lot of different things going on. I thought, from what I saw, I thought we didn't play brilliantly. I thought there were some sort of bright sparks. Sort of Olakigbe looked really good at points. But it does just seem to be the way that when we get these lower league teams, we play a lot of these squad players, so you'd maybe expect to step up, but you know, it's never quite as easy as that, so it always feels a bit flat. But I think it's just the cup, really, isn't it? And they'll have been bang up for it, so it just happens, really. But yeah, on paper, I'd say we probably should have got the win.
Yeah, should have done. Well, we you know, fortunately we did, and you know, we've got Ellery Balcombe to thank, really, for the Arsenal home match. And I think it was lovely to see Thomas Frank kind of with his arm around the young goalkeeper, well, not so young goalkeeper anymore, but he's still young, and kind of lead him to the away end and kind of, you know, allow Ellery to enjoy his moment, you know, his moment under the spotlight, because he didn't do a lot wrong at all during the game. I mean, not that they created masses. He couldn't really do anything for the goal. It was a really good cross in and a decent header that kind of went past him before he had a chance to move. And, you know, he had he didn't have a bit of luck. We had a bit of luck that the first penalty they took hit the base of the post and that went away to safety. But then he saved the next two to his right. And, you know, similar saves to one another, actually. And you know, our penalty takers were lethal. All three were converted, and it was KLP that stepped up to get the penalty that actually won us the tie. So we've heard a lot about Eric Balcombe. He's been out on loan a lot. He's been, you know, obviously given extended contracts, so he's obviously a goalkeeper that we rate highly. Do you think that will kind of catapult him a little bit more further up into the manager and the head coach's thoughts and have a little bit more confidence in him?
Yeah, I do. I mean, he looks to be you know, with Sokrosha sort of a little bit flaky, he looks to be Thomas's sort of number two, doesn't he? I mean, he was on the bench, wasn't he, against Palace, I think, and, you know, it looks like he's backing him. And I feel like the last couple of seasons we've sort of seen that Thomas makes his choices for the cup, and I think he's probably earned the right to start the next one, and probably he will be the cup keeper. And, you know, it'd be good to see how he does. I mean, it's a great story, isn't it? Because he's been at the club since he was 8 years old, and he's been close to number two, and then got out on loan and come back again. And it's great to see him sort of back in the fold. There's a lot of good stuff written about him, about his talent when he was younger. So, you know, we might have a really good keeper there. You know, I know we've got Matthew Cox out on loan as well. I felt like we've got strong homegrown options, you know, bubbling away, which is good.
What did you think, Charlie? Is there any other standouts, any other kind of like highlights for you from Tuesday night?
Not hugely, but I think, for me anyway, I think Ellery Balcombe is kind of exactly what you want from a first round cup game of one sort of success story of a youth player. I don't know if either of you saw his Instagram posts after, but he was clearly absolutely chuffed with how things went. He was sharing everything that got sent to him. He was absolutely loving it. And more than anything, it's really nice to see. I think I probably agree with Mark. I think he's probably a bit of a way off kind of first team selection. But, you know, Strakosha seems to be injured almost every other week at the minute. So I imagine Balcombe's probably going to end up getting a fair bit of time on the bench. And I don't think he'll have done himself any harm last night. I think in terms of other positives, really good to see Ben Mee back out there. Obviously, superb last year. And it almost feels a bit strange that Collins has maybe come in and taken his starting spot, because I think there's definitely an argument that Mee was probably our best player last season. It's a difficult one. I think that Balcombe's definitely the main positive, but definitely seeing Ben Mee back out on the pitch is great. And I'm sure he'll have a fair bit to add this season.
Yeah, nice one. So before we move on, we also go back to Rodney Parade. Well, let's go back there in audio form. I don't want to go back there physically maybe forever. But no offence, I'll leave that and move on. So you know, let's go back to the terraces and just listen to a little bit of the penalty shootout.
77% possession. It's the League Cup, round one, whatever, who cares really? But obviously we want to win. But all that possession just make you worry about the depth and our midfield creativity. But hey, first penalty is coming up.
Are we going to do Talksport? Let's do Talksport together. So, I'm Jim Weiss and I'm terribly excited by this. So Balcombe's in goal, and then their player's coming up to
Liverpool player steps up and scores.
And no, he doesn't. He's hit the post. Oh, I don't believe it. I don't believe it, Jim. He's hit the post. Oh. Ellery Balcombe was beaten. He went the wrong way, but he hit the base of the post. So Brentford come up. Brian Mbeumo comes up to put us 1-0 ahead, I'm hoping. He actually looked like... He looked like a different class when he came on, to be honest,
yeah,
Brian Mbeumo.
He really made a difference, didn't he, Mbeumo? Like, he was the one player who came on, you thought, this is a man who's playing above his level. But I've said that now, he's going to miss.
Oh, he's placed the ball on the spot.
Brian doesn't miss.
And
don't worry about that.
Brian, who's been learning off of Ivan Toney, and he's stepping up now. Will he put us ahead in this penalty shootout? Yes, he has. Brian Mbeumo. 3 out of 3 penalties so far for him this season. Oh, isn't this exciting, Jim?
Well, it's only the courage and conviction, Dave. This may be a Simon Cajun, by the way. Yeah. Well, is he for real? Has he got the courage and conviction? I think he has. But when I was at Crystal Palace, he did,
So here he comes, the amber demon, the second penalty taker, the Newport number 5, I think it is, for my eyesight.
22.
Ellery Balcombe, will he save all of them tonight? Yes! He has saved it! Ellery Balcombe has saved it! So they have missed their first 2 penalties, where Brentford have scored their first one. Are you liking my commentary on this, Jim?
So I'm following, Dave. So that basically means it's 1-0 on penalties to Brentford.
And this is stepping up now.
And this is, I believe, Johan Wisser.
Johan Wisser, I've heard of him.
From the Premier League.
I've heard of him from the DRC.
He's going to smash it.
And he is going to score! And Brentford are 2-0 up.
To Brentford.
That's Brentford 2, Newport 0. If only you would have done this in 90 minutes, Lee, we would have been back in the pub by now. So, Ellery! So, this reminds me of Richard Lee against Everton, where he saves quite a few penalties.
Don't worry,
No, that's a long time ago now.
Ellery in goal!
It's going to be all right! Oh! So here he comes, the number whatever he is.
He's scored his one.
Yeah, he can't miss another one, can he? He can't miss another one, surely.
Or can they?
Yes, he can! Ellery Balkin, he makes another save. Dives to his right. So Brentford basically have to score this one and they've won.
David, it's still Brentford 2.
It's still in the mixer.
Anything can happen.
If we fuck it up from here, we really are in all kinds of trouble.
We deserve to lose.
So Matty Jensen, who scored in the normal time, in regulation time.
Again, your glasses not working. That's Keane Lewis Potter.
Oh, is it Keane Lewis Potter? I said my eyes don't work.
Just don't have a one.
He's never scored for Brentford, has he?
And he has now.
And he has now. Brentford are through. And Brentford are in the cup for the easy. So Brentford win the World Cup here in Wales.
We
wanted European football this year, and we've got it.
And we got it. But American football, and Welsh football, amazing.
Ellery Balkin has waited 25 years for his moment, son. Well done, Brentford. Actually, they. We thought they'd screwed it and they hadn't. The class came through in the end.
We've talked about Palace, we've talked about Newport. But before we move on to the transfers, I feel a bit funky. You two, how are you feeling? You feeling funky, Mark?
Always.
Are you, but Charlie, what, you more factual or are you more funky?
I'm bloody funky, as ever. Okay, it's Thursday night, Dave.
All right. Well, I'll be the facty one. So between us, we're going to get some facts and funk from JB, and everyone's going to be happy. Take it away, JB.
Are you ready for this? I told you it was coming.
Who?
JB, and he's ready to stock it to you one time.
Hello, Jonathan Birchall here again. Last season, we were knocked out of the League Cup 6-5 by Gillingham. The only time to date that the first 11 penalties were scored in one of our shootouts. At Newport on Tuesday, Ellery Balkin was the hero as he followed up on Newport's first miss with two penalty saves to see us through to round 3, 3-0 on penalties. He's only now second goalkeeper to keep a clean sheet in one of our 29 penalty shootouts. The other was Graham Benstead in a 1991 Leyland AFC Cup match. Ironically, also against Welsh opposition, on that occasion Wrexham, where he saved all three of the penalties that he faced. Back to Saturday, where we recorded a fifth successive draw against Crystal Palace. In our previous 30 league meetings, we'd had just four draws, and none at all in our first 14 league meetings. Thomas announced an unchanged starting 11 from the Fulham game. That was something he didn't do for successive Premier League games at all last season. Another change was without Josh De Silva through injury. He was the only player last season to be in the matchday squad for all our 38 league games and our three cup matches. Sam Ngodos returned to the club this week, starting a second spell. He is following in the footsteps of players like George Francis, Roger Cross, Gordon Sweetser, Stan Bowles, Bob Booker, Paul Priddy, Marcus Gale, Nicky Forster and Zanka. But he has still some way to go to beat John Doherty, who signed three times as a player. 1959, 65 and 70. He then went on to be appointed manager in 1975, before in 1984 he returned as assistant manager when he joined the club for a record fifth time.
There you go, Jonathan Birchall again. He never fails to deliver that, man. Well done. Thank you ever so much for sending that through again, JB, and looking forward to some more facts and some more funk from you next week. Before we talk about transfers, the England squad was announced, and we were kind of hoping after the start of the season that he's had that Rico Henry would be named. Now, maybe that's a bit naive of us, because we've been disappointed time after time when Southgate names his England squads, that, you know, he just overlooks a player that's, you know, as honest as the day is long. He's one of the fastest players I've seen in a B shirt, and he just gives his all, and he's just one of the highest performers, I think, in the Premier League this season. I that's not an exaggeration. I know we're blinkered because he's our player, but he's clearly improved, and he's clearly added something more to his game. If you could criticise him slightly in the past, it's been, you know, his final ball and his delivery and getting into an area himself. But again, you can't accuse him of any of that this season. He's worked wonders. Should we give up the ghost on Henry playing for England with Southgate in control? And because, you know, his selections today have been, a couple of them are bizarre. So, you know, what would you think, Charlie?
Yeah, I think it's always really frustrating, Rico not getting in. I mean, obviously, touch wood, it won't happen, but he's been slightly linked with a move to Man United in the last few weeks. And part of me almost wanted him to go so that finally people understood quite how good Rico Henry is. Because obviously, as soon as he'd signed for United, I think he'd be in the England squad as soon as the next squad was announced, really. So it's one of those things, I think, as you said, I think it's not at all a shock. I think Gareth is clearly... I don't know if he just trusts players too much. I mean, how Maguire and Calvin Phillips have got in when they've probably played about three games between them over the last season. I've got no idea. But yeah, it's really disappointing. And I think with Shaw being injured, it made a lot of sense to take Rico. And the other thing is, you know, you can take a player as he did with Tony and not even play him. But the experience of taking someone along, giving him that exposure to the England camp, I think it would have been really, really good for Rico. And it is a shame, because I think for me, he's easily one of the top left backs in the league, and you know, he's controversially, I'd say he's probably slightly better than Luke Shaw anyway, irrespective of his injury. So it's a real shame, but unfortunately, as you said, it's just what we've come to expect from Mr. Southgate. But yeah, we'll see. I'm sure we'll get in there at some point, but inevitably just after he signed for a bigger club.
How about you, Mark? What's your thoughts on the subject?
I feel slightly differently to Charlie about this, because for me, Rico has started the season sensationally well. And I think he has started to deal with the reason why he hasn't made the squad, which is end product. I think end product is the reason he hasn't been picked. And I think it's right that he hasn't been picked. So it might be a controversial view amongst a lot of Bees fans, but, you know, speaking to people on the terraces at GTEC, I don't think I'm alone in feeling this way, because when he does break past that last man, often he doesn't pick the right ball, and often he doesn't use it as well as other attacking fullbacks around the national team do. But this season, we've already seen him put that right twice, I think. Once in pre-season in the States, and again, I think in the Fulham game, I think, if I'm right, where, you know, he has burst past using that undeniable pace, but there has been that final ball and that end product. And I think that's what Southgate is looking at. And I think if he carries on in the way he's started this season, then it is undeniable that Rico will make the England squad because of his pace.
Okay, that's a rounded take on the situation. Yeah, you know, I think from the form so far this season, he deserves his chance. But, you know, perhaps it's perhaps a phone call has gone in and Southgate said, you know, you carry this on, I can't ignore you. Maybe it's the following window. It's not now or never, is it? Let's be honest. You know, I'm just looking at players, you know, people like Levi Colwill, who is literally played, you know, three games for Chelsea. You know, he's hardly played for him, you know, and Brighton, and he's just I don't know. Has he earned that right over Rico? And I know they're not, you know, they're not like for like in position, but I just think there are players within that team, in that squad, that, you know, that, you know, people like Jordan Henderson now, and, you know, as Charlie said, you know, you've obviously got Harry Maguire in there, and Calvin Phillips. I mean, they've certainly not earned their place in that squad on merit. So, you know, I think it's harsh on Rico.
Yeah, it's undeniably harsh. You know, to see, as you say, Colwell in there, it is surprising. But, you know, I think most pundits have said time and time again that he's probably one of the best one-on-one defenders in the Premier League. I just think in international football, when we do break forward with the wide players, we do need end product. And, you know, Rico's journey in football, you know, it's humbling, it's incredible. But we haven't seen him play against top quality European opposition yet. And I just think probably when we get in and around the Europa Cup, and he starts going up against good quality opposition in international, you know, players, you know, in European games and stuff like that, it's just going to be impossible for Southgate to ignore him because of his other strengths. But that end product is the key for Rico. If he deals with that by Christmas, I think he'll get in.
So the two fixtures that we're talking about for England is we're in Poland for a match against Ukraine on Saturday the 9th of September. And then that's followed up on the Tuesday at Hampden for a match, an old school match with Scotland. That's to celebrate the 150th anniversary of the first friendly. So that's there'll be a couple of interesting games, which you'd hope we will win both of, but you're never quite sure at the moment that the team. But there you go. We'll see what happens. We have to now move on to the transfer window because the whole of the footballing world is talking about it. TalkSport are in meltdown. Sky Sports News, they're in meltdown. Five Live are in meltdown. There'll be podcasts galore coming out, all of them outdated almost the minute they get published, because it seems that there's going to be transfers right up until the window slams shut, as Jim White used to say. We've been linked with a fair few names in the transfer window. Not many of them, obviously, apart from the ones that we've already got, you know, the Fleckens and the Collins, that which we did kind of our business early. We got Semang Gyökeres back this week. Now, hands up if you saw that one coming, lads. doesn't work on in an audio form, but I can see no hands in the air.
No hands are up. No
hands in the air. The return of Semang Gyökeres, you know, he's a very popular player amongst the players. The jury was really out amongst the fans. He never really let us down, but, you know, we chased him for a couple of transfer windows. Once it didn't, it went, you know, there was lots of agent shenanigans involved and a medical, and that didn't happen. Then we went back in for him and we got him the next window. He didn't really, I don't think we ever saw what anyone saw in him, to be honest. He was, as I said, he was a fairly hard working player, but he didn't really have a position. And he covered at left back, he covered at right back, he covered up front. He was a utility player the way we used him, but I don't think that's not why we bought him, I don't think. But he just reminded, seeing him kind of announced in the transfer window when everyone's expecting something else to happen, just reminded me of Bob Booker coming back in 1993, whenever it was. We you know, we'd sell our goodbyes to Bob, and he went off to Sheffield United in the top flight, and we thought, you know, became firm fan favourite up there. They love Bob Booker, and so do we. And then you know, we just lost Dean Holdsworth, and we've gone up to the top, you know, the second tier, you know, was a Championship, and we were struggling, and we were expecting sort of some big names to come in, and we were crying out for some extra faces. And then Bob Booker was announced. And again, not knocking Bob, because he's a lovely bloke and he's a good friend of ours at Beside, but he wasn't what we were expecting. And Samam Godos wasn't what we were expecting. Charlie, is it a bit of a no-brainer because he knows the system and we just need some cover? Or shouldn't we have gone back?
I think it was always going to be an underwhelming signing when you re-sign a player that we had the goodbye ceremony to a couple of months ago. Also at that ceremony, it very much felt like he was sort of rushed a bit, and then it was onto the Pontus goodbye. So it felt a bit weird at the time anyway. But I think with the injuries to Baptiste and De Silva, I think it makes a lot of sense. As you said, he knows the system. He knows the squad. He's not going to come in. I think he's...
Picture the scene. All of your mates around. You've got your McNugget share boxes ready to go. Partner this with your team playing champagne football. Perfect. Order McDelivery now on the McDonald's app. There's nothing quite like a McDelivery. At participating restaurants, 18 plus, serving times, delivery fee and terms apply. See mcdonalds.com.
The TalkSport Fan Network is proudly teaming up with Three for Mental Health Awareness Week this year. As football fans, we often pride ourselves on knowing everything, from which substitution can turn the game around to the quickest route home to beat the crowds. However, when it comes to discussing feelings with our friends, we might not always feel as confident. That's why we're here to equip you with the right tools so you can reach out to those who can help. If your mates are struggling, let them know that the Samaritans are free to call on 116 123. That's 116 123. They are there to listen without judgment or pressure, 24/7, 365 days of the year. Let's all take a moment to talk more than football.
Probably fully aware that his role is going to be that utility player who can come on at left back, come on in goal, come up on top. It could be anywhere. But I think the signing itself makes a lot of sense because he does know the system. Granted, he certainly didn't set the world alight in his first spell here, but I think, you know, he's a player that can come in, come off the bench occasionally and hopefully do a bit more than he did last time. But yeah, I think the way we're playing this year might even suit him a bit more. Obviously, slightly less kind of direct football up to Ivan, slightly more intricate. Who knows? It might suit him really well. But yeah, it was an underwhelming one. But actually, after a bit of reflection, I think it's actually quite a smart move. And I presume that he was basically struggling to find another club. And then the two injuries came and we gave him a call to come back. So yeah, I think it's one of those that makes a lot of sense, and hopefully does a bit more than first time round.
We did that with Zanka as well, Mark, didn't we? We went back and sort of, you know, we knew him. He knows us. We know him. He's within that circle of trust, and you know, it's obviously it's a different situation. We weren't going to give him a new contract, but we probably would have kept him if, you know, that's the way it's worked out, isn't it? It's almost like, you know, he's come back to us and it's not really cost us anything.
Yeah, completely agree. I mean, it's interesting that, like, these days we don't hear too much about, you know, players' injuries, I guess, for tactical reasons, and we don't want other clubs knowing too much about, you know, what's happened. So I guess seeing Godos back has made me think that maybe De Silva's hamstring or knock is perhaps a little bit more serious than perhaps we hoped. But, you know, I mean, I can remember a really dreary away game up at Burnley, and the only bright spark was an amazing scissor kick from Godos from the edge of the D. And I remember reading that Arsene Wenger, when he was younger, I think he played against Arsenal in the Champions League in a group game, and he completely ran the game from midfield, and Wenger was raving about him. So for me, I think he's a number eight. I think he's a sort of Matty Jensen player, but we've just never really been able to play him there because we've got Matty. So as you say, probably his attitude is so good, he's happy to be playing, that he's valuable because Thomas can pick him, as you say, in a number of positions, and he's bang up for it, and his attitude is great, and the players love to have him on board. So that is valuable, right? And the no dickheads policy thing is super valuable.
Yeah, no, I'm 100%. So yeah, no one's knocking him. It's just that we weren't expecting the return of Simon Golos, and you know, hopefully he can come in and he can you know, be called upon as and when required. He didn't make the squad, didn't travel, I don't think, down to Newport. He wasn't on the bench, so you know, maybe he's not fit. I don't know. Anyway, we move on there. The one player that we definitely put in a massive bid for, as we've said earlier, is Johan Bakayoko. He's a young Belgian player with PSV Eindhoven forward. Looked very similar to you know, the winger stroke striker situation we have. Maybe that's the kind of player that we want. He doesn't look a lot different to both Mbeumo and to Shada, in the way he can drop his shoulder and cut inside and unleash a shot. He did a completely different build to Wiesa. So €34.2 million is the amount of money that we've put in. I've got a feeling that the language that the reporting is using is this is a deal that the player's interested in, PSV are interested in, and the bid is serious. I think it rises to €40 million with add-ons and performance-related bonuses, etc. He looks an incredibly exciting player. He played in the match against Glasgow Rangers last night out in Eindhoven, and they demolished Rangers, and apparently he played absolutely brilliantly in that. Are you excited about this one, Mark?
Yeah, definitely. There's also talk about another guy, Bradley Barcola from Lyon, also 20 years old, also a winger. So for me, this is making me think that the club realised that Ivan Toney is going to go in January, and that we got a move Sade through the middle, and we need a replacement for Sade on the left, or we need to move our wide players around and use someone who's, you know, on the right side. So for me, it's starting to show me that Phil Giles realizes that the writing's on the wall about Ivan, and Ivan won't play for Brentford club again, which I'm sad about, but I think that's what the player wants. And I think the club, you know, we know what the club's mentality is, that they want to act now, they want to be ready. So I think that's why we're seeing these big bids go in for these wide players, because they know that Sade is gonna go through the middle and is gonna replace Ivan.
And Charlie, you know, we've had a couple of other big bids that, you know, that it doesn't look like they're going to come to fruition. You know, Brennan Johnson is someone that we've been after for consecutive transfer windows. I think we bid mid 30 millions for him. It looks like Tottenham are going to get that player. Personally, I'm happy for them to get that player. I still don't see... I mean, obviously, I see lots of good in him, but every time I watch him play in the Premier League, I'm thinking, really? Okay, he does a couple of good things, but not to the same level as, you know, a Brian Mbeumo, who I can't say anything. I, you know, there are no more superlatives for Brian for me at the moment. I just think he's turned into like such a mature, experienced, exciting player. You know, if Brennan Johnson is worth 40, then Mbeumo has got to be worth, you know, double that. In my opinion. And the other transfer target that we've kind of been in on a lot is Nico Gonzalez from Fiorentina, who they don't seem to want to sell him, and he doesn't seem to want to come. So the combination of those two things doesn't mean the transfer is going to get close. We've been in for others, I think, but you know, this Bakayoko deal, Charlie, I get a good vibe about this one. How about you?
Yeah, it's one of those where I'm going in pretty blind. I've never watched him properly, but for some reason, I'm convinced we've just signed a future Ballon d'Or winner. There's something about him. When I've watched him on YouTube, he looks class. And yeah, I watched a bit of the game last night just to do a bit of a scouting mission, and he did look really, really good. I think, as Mark said, I think he's one of those where he very much kind of fits the mould of the players that we're looking to sign. And you know, it's almost surreal that he's at PSV, who have just qualified for the Champions League, and he's potentially moving on down to West London to come and play for the Bees. It has actually, in the last 40 minutes, I've seen, apparently, they're sort of expecting to sell because they've got a replacement lined up already over at PSV. So it's looking like it's quite likely to get done, according to a certain popular Twitter agent. Who shall remain nameless, obviously. But yeah, it's a really exciting one. And I think, to me, he very much fits the mould of the players that we would usually sign. It just probably feels a bit more exciting because we're paying so much money for him. But I think it's just kind of an evolution of us now being in the Premier League and being able to attract these players who are already at top clubs. And you know, I think it's a landmark signing in a way, if it all comes through.
It would be, yeah. I certainly don't want to jinx that. And I just get a slight feeling that we're still a little bit light with the two injuries in midfield, as you said a minute ago, Charlie, and we've got this perennial cover for Rico that we don't really have. You know, we've got players that can play there, but we haven't got a real left back number two. It would appear that the powers that be would prefer players that are wingers that can be converted to centre forwards than really an out and out number nine. That's what they do. I think we need. Well, of course, you can understand why you want players that have got flexibility and, you know, they're not utility, but you know you can cause havoc by as Mark said earlier. We had a fluid forward line. The defenders don't really know who they're picking up. The patterns of play are so intelligent and intricate. They work on them all week, and then they know what they're doing. You know, I don't think Thomas is holding up numbers like little sequences yet on the side on his little whiteboard. But you know, we underestimate how intelligent these footballers are, and you know they're able to bamboozle some of the best defenders in the land. And Charlie, so you know, do you think that we're light, or do you think the squad's going to cope all right?
Well, yeah, I was going to say, it's one of those things. I feel like every single transfer window, at least for kind of the last 7-8 years, there have been a few glaring gaps that everyone has felt that we need to sign someone who can cover it. And I think so far we've probably been quite lucky. You know, Rico's obviously had that really bad injury when he first started, and then we missed him a bit, I think, in the first year in the Prem, couple of games. But he, you know, there's definitely some areas on the pitch where we're a bit light, but I think the club fully know, you know, if there was one club to get it right, it seems like our club do, and they have done in the last few windows. And when it's felt like we've needed a replacement, we've kind of just kept getting stronger and stronger. So yeah, I think we've clearly got a lot of faith in a lot of players in the B team, players who can step up and do a job. You know, in an ideal world, I think, yes, I'd quite like to definitely go out and get another left back and also maybe another centre mid. But you know, I think one of the main things that Thomas has is he's got a happy squad, and you know, if you bring in too many players, it can be difficult to rotate people. Players are going to get unhappy, and yeah, it certainly feels that we're lightweight. But you know, it's felt like that every summer, and we've done all right so far.
How about you, Mark?
Well, I think there is a lot of flexibility in our players. You know, I mean, Aaron Hickey, you know, he's so two-footed, isn't he? That I think he is able to slot in and cover for Rico on the left. I think he played on the left, didn't he, at his previous club, I think, if I remember right. So, I mean, I feel like the players that we tend to sign are adaptable, and the club probably has got, you know, one or two, if not three, different visions about how they could use those players. So I just feel the other thing worth mentioning as well is, you know, the way we turned Ollie Watkins from a left-sided midfielder into a striker over a couple of seasons. So, you know, that coaching team is still at the club, and I just feel like we've got the know-how. We know how to make wide players effective centre-forwards in the Premier League. So I think that we'll be happy to do it again.
I mean, I don't want to overlook Yarmolenko, because he was someone that he seems to be really rated. He's been promoted up into the proper 18 this season, and he played a couple of really good games, or one particularly good game out in the States. and he had a solid 90, well, not 90 minutes, but he had a good run out against Newport the other night. Part of me is obviously a little bit frustrated that the serendipity, the revolving of the revolving doors didn't quite align for Mads Bistrup, because I think if he hadn't been sold to Red Bull a few weeks back, it would be a really good opportunity now. We do need centre midfielders, and he was a cracking one. But you understand kind of why the decisions were made at that time.
I do. I did. I just sort of honourable mention for Brearley. You know,
yes, of course, a good shout. Yeah,
he's broken in the most impressive way, hasn't he? I mean, every time that lad has been on the pitch, he's sort of demanding the ball at his feet. And I don't know. I just, you know, having watched Brentford for a long time, I'm really excited about him. I mean, he really feels like he's got something to me. Never seen such a young guy demand the ball from experienced players like he does. So, you know, maybe the club know that they've got someone coming through there that, you know, they really rate, they really fancy.
Yeah, he really has seized his opportunities, hasn't he? You know, the pre-season game against Lille, and then the other night against Newport. Yeah, he looks every bit a comfortable, you know, composed midfielder there. Probably he's really surprised them as well. I think, you know, they obviously knew he's good, but did they really know that he was going to seize it like he has? And long may that continue. So yeah, so I mean, we're recording this on Thursday evening, so with Friday night is the deadline. So there's still plenty of time for stuff to happen. We're not expecting anyone to go, but you never know. And we're expecting one, if not two, players in. Three would be really good, but we haven't got to spend money just for the sake of it. But you know, as we've highlighted, we have got injuries. We have got the African Nations coming up in January. There is cover required, but then you know, we have got rookie talent coming through. But you know, do you want that in the Premier League? Do you want to be risking that? You know, yeah, it's the way we do things, but I'm sure there's some more experience coming through before the deadline. Do you think, we've got this situation as well? I mean, I'm not going to take it too much broader than Brentford, but one of the biggest stories is like Mo Salah potentially going to Saudi Arabia. You know, they seem to be coming in for some of the biggest names in the Premier League. Do you think that it actually could work in Brentford's favour at some stage? Because the top dogs in the Prem, they seem to be having it all their own way with the talent and the money. And all of a sudden, you've got Saudi Arabia coming into this. Talk about the politics and the morals of all of that, but you can't doubt that they are buying up a lot of talent, and that could actually get bigger, and that actually could, you know, really change the power of the world game. Do you think, Mark?
Yeah, that makes a lot of sense to me. It's like supply and demand, isn't it? I mean, we've suddenly got and the interesting thing about Saudi league is it's actually the league that signs the players. And then they assign the signing to a team, don't they? So God knows how that works. But so you've got a hungry league to try to get themselves a Champions League spot. And they're all out to sort of, you know, buy top talent, aren't they, from the Premiership to try and make that league, you know, top 10 league in the world. So to me, that's pulling some of the talent out of the Premiership because of the salaries on offer. And we are working on supplying that demand, aren't we? We're unearthing these young gems, and they're going to be very attractive to clubs with Saudi-sized gaps to fill, basically.
Mm-hmm. Charlie, would you get out of bed for £1.5 million a week?
Yeah, I wouldn't need much convincing, to be honest. I think I'd be over in Saudi as soon as you could book me a flight. It is weird. It's one of those weird things. I think it feels like it's a bit of a shame for football seeing all these really good players go off to Saudi. But I think, unfortunately, it's probably the way the game's headed. And you're right. I think there's a lot of clubs, us and Brighton, other honourable mentions, I'm sure. But, you know, there's going to be some clubs that can take advantage of it, where maybe Saudi think our players probably aren't being paid enough to justify the huge contracts they're giving out. So, yeah, I think it's exciting for us. I will say my FPL team will be absolutely devastated if Salah does go. Going to have to be some big transfers in. But yeah, I think it's a shame that the Premier League are losing these players. But also, you know, as you said, the big teams have had it their own way for so long, and it's, you know, hopefully a bit of an equaliser. Not that they particularly need one at Brentford, because we've done quite well against the big teams anyway.
Yeah. And last, but yeah. Before we move on out of the transfer talk, you know, the Arsenal draw in the Carabao Cup, the League Cup, we'll see David Raya's Arsenal come to GTEC. There's technically he can play in it, Mark. I understand. Whether he will or not, we'll see.
That's what I've read online, yeah. I mean, it was such a unique transfer deal, wasn't it? The construction of that deal was something else. So I'm pretty sure he's not cup-tied. And, yeah, I mean, I think probably Arteta will probably play him as the cup goalkeeper. Otherwise, why did he buy him, quite frankly? Mm-hmm. So, you know, I think we probably will be able to wind him up at the GTEC, and I think we will. Wind him up for the GTEC. I think there'll be a lot of your shits from the goal kicks, and I think he will love it. I think he will enjoy it, and I think it'll all be done in good spirits. And he's hugely admired at Brentford, isn't he? And rightly so. So, but I do think he will get the maximum.
He'll get the full rats. Yeah. Charlie, should he have stayed with the big club? Because I'm sure that's going to be sung.
Absolutely should have done.
What kind of reception is he going to get? Kind of serious question.
He's obviously going to get a bad reception. I don't think it's at all. I think he'll get an applause when his name comes out initially, to be honest. But then I think it will be straight down to business as soon as it kicks off.
Straight down to business. Gloves are straight off after that.
Exactly. For me, anyway, I'd have actually been way more annoyed if he signed for Spurs. To me, him going to Arsenal actually vaguely makes a bit of sense as the goalkeeping coach link. He'll actually play European football. So I didn't hate the transfer. Obviously, he should have stayed at a big club, but I'm sure we'll give him an absolute hammering on Saturday, which I, for one, will surely be joining in with. But
I look forward to cringing at that. You know, yeah, that's what I mean on a different kind of magnitude. This, but it did the cringe when Eriksen came back with Man United. I just like. I was laughing and cringing and joining in all at the same time. It was just that's the joy of football, isn't it? It's like you can have a hero that you love, and then the minute they move, like, you absolutely bait the hell out of them. So brilliant. Yeah, no, I look forward to that under the floodlights in a couple of weeks' time. So is it, you know, also as well with the cup draw, I used to always be looking out for, you know, all the times we were in the lower leagues, yearning for a big draw like this, you know, Arsenal or Chelsea, or we had last year or the year before, and now I'm thinking, oh god, just win some shit just so we can get through to Arsenal came out. It's like, well, we've got to play Arsenal again, you know. Not that, you know, it's not a hardship to play Arsenal again, it's that actually I want to go quite deep into this tournament, and you know, we stand a better chance of getting, well, we said that when we got Gillingham last year, so yeah, you just play whoever we got the beating of Arsenal, so bring them on. So talking of bringing it on, we've got Bournemouth at the weekend. As a Saudi Arabian citizen, it's the least glamorous Premiership fixture of the season, I would have thought. There was a lot of tickets floating around for the Crystal Palace last Saturday. I don't think anyone's going to struggle to get a ticket for the Bournemouth match. And I said that to the Bournemouth guys. I'm not actually, you know, I'm not sort of down talking them. It's just it's been a really sort of hectic first few weeks of the season. It's school holidays, etc. So anyone that wants a ticket, there's just sniff around online. There's plenty going, but it should be a really, really excellent game of football. They've got a new manager that really likes to play attacking football. They've got an exciting team. They're very similar to us in terms of, you know, they're sort of punching above their weight, and they're one of the least glamorous teams in the Prem, but they're there on merit, and they've got some, as I said, some excellent players. What are you thinking on Saturday? Don't give us your predictions yet, because we'll go away and we're going to talk to Matt from Up the Cherries podcast in a minute. But what's your vibe going into the game, Mark?
Well, I think in some ways it will be similar to the Palace game, and I hope we kind of learn a little bit from the tempo in that second half, because I think we'll have to be on it, and we'll have to play, move the ball quickly, and try to take control of that game and dominate. So I just hope that the players, you know, I think it's a mindset thing, really. I think, you know, we can get up for the top six, and, you know, we need to be up for these winnable games. That's 3 points that, you know, could be 3 massive steps on the way to European football for us. So I want to see them fly out of the traps in the front of the first half and in the front of the second half, and dominate, really. We're at home. We've got to win that.
Yeah, no, I agree. I mean, they've had a tricky start to the season. They've taken 1 point from their 3 matches. West Ham at home was a draw, and then they lost to Liverpool and Spurs. You could argue that they've had a really tough start. They won. We were in South Wales, and so were they on Tuesday. They got a 3-2 win at Swansea. We got a penalty win at Newport. But let's go. Oh, actually, let's hear from Matt before we speak to Charlie. Matt runs Up the Cherries podcast, and he's going to tell us everything that's going on down at whatever you call it now, Dean Court Vitality Stadium, is it? Or it's had loads of names, but I'm going to call it Dean Court. Take it away, Matt.
Hi, I'm Matt, and I'm from Up the Cherries in all departments. Obviously, we are a AFC Bournemouth-based podcast. We're on YouTube, Spotify, also part of the TalkSport fan network. But on our channel, we've got all sorts of things from our weekly podcast, Cherry Picking, to interviews with past players, managers and chairmen. For example, we've had Harry Redknapp, who's a good friend of the channel. He comes on quite regular. We've had Charlie Daniels, Steve Cook, club legend Steve Fletcher, as well as other players like Luther Blissett, who obviously played for Bournemouth in the very, very early 90s, late 80s. So that's a little bit about what the channel is. Last season... Overall, got to say happy with it, because we stayed in the league. That was the brief at the start, was to stay up, which we managed to do. Obviously, we had a transition period with new ownership as well amongst all of that. So it was a little bit up and down in terms of things going on at the club. I mean, to give it like a mark out of 10, you're probably looking at, I mean, with performances as well, I mean, you know, 5 out of 10. We did the bare minimum, really. Obviously, with the new ownership comes the manager's position. Gary O'Neill was given the manager's position in January time on a 14-month deal. For me, I always believed that the new ownership would make a change of manager during the summer. He was kind of appointed right on the transition period, so I think it was kind of an agreement between sort of the previous owner, the technical director, and with a little bit of input from the incoming owner. So I always felt that he would make the change. People say it was unfair that he was dismissed, and I can see why they say that. I actually made the call on one of our podcasts in January, saying that, you know, the new regime would make a change, which they did. But you know, we've got to be thankful to Gary O'Neill. You know, he did the job. He picked up a side that were very, very deflated by the previous manager. He picked up the guys and turned out a 0-0 draw straight after being hammered 9-0 by Liverpool. And the players seemed like they wanted to play for him. To be fair, not all performances were great. There was probably substitutions where, you know, we questioned why is he taking him off and bringing him on, like we all do as football fans. But there was just something with it that just didn't quite make sense sometimes with substitutions. And as for the last four performances of the season, I understand he was trying out new like tactics and players, trying out different players in different positions and stuff, but the performances were really, really poor. So, like I say, I'll always be thankful to Gary O'Neill for doing a good job by keeping the club in the Premier League, but overall, I don't think he was really somebody that the new ownership really wanted in place. The new season, the first few matches, obviously we've played West Ham, we've played Liverpool at Anfield, we've played Tottenham at home, and we've played Swansea in the Cup. Bit of a mixed bag. There's some strong individual performances within the squad at the moment. For example, like David Brooks, Justin Kluivert, to name a couple, Milos Kerkez. There's a lot of real talent in the squad now. But I think it's a case of where new manager comes in and he's still trying to put his philosophy into the squad. I think the squad is still adapting. They're adapting not only to a new manager, but to new signings coming in, and they're adapting to their surroundings. And the transfer window for us, I don't think, is finished yet. I wouldn't be surprised if we see another player come in. And obviously some of the players we have signed are out injured as well. So it's been a little bit of a mixed bag for us, but there's been a lot of promising performances. West Ham, for example, apart from probably, I would say, the first 10 minutes of each half, we were the better side, I would say, in terms of going forward. We looked good. We had chances that hit the bar, hit the post. So, you know, in theory, you know, on another day, we would have won that game. Anfield, I mean, not many sides can go to Anfield and be 1-0 up within the first few minutes. We could have been 2-0 up, but obviously we had a goal disallowed. Once their equaliser went in, we kind of lost it a little bit, but we're still going at them. And that's the thing with the new manager. It's a case of you score two, we're going to score three mentality. So, yeah, it's still very, very early days. But I think maybe a couple of more signings in the transfer window. Maybe another striker. I'm very happy with what we've done in the transfer window over the last several weeks. Bringing in a talent like Alex Scott, for example, is a real big coup. And obviously Tyler Adams, the USA captain coming in, is going to really add to that midfield. Because obviously we've lost Jefferson Lerma, who's obviously gone to Crystal Palace. So hopefully Adams can fill that void. But yeah, it's been a good window. Max Aarons has come in from Norwich. Great little player. Milos Kerkez, like I said, a Hungarian international left back, only 19 years of age, but he's got a real mature footballing head on his shoulders. And like I say, I don't think our window's finished yet. I'm hoping we get another player in before the deadline hits. So in terms of the squad, I'm comfortable with the squad for this season, but I think we just need to add a striker, in my personal opinion. We've got a lot of wingers, a lot of players that can play in behind the front man, but I think Dom Solanke needs some real competition this season. I believe we can build on it from last year. For me, if we're changing manager, which we have done, then surely we've got to put in a better performance than what we put in last season overall. So I would expect us to finish higher up the league to justify changing the manager. Players, there's a lot of players that excite us as well in the squad at the minute. I mean, Justin Kluivert, great little player. You've got other players as well, like David Brooks, who I've mentioned. Billing, Philip, he can be a very excitable player. The whole squad as a whole, once they gel, will be a real good attacking force. I think that with the new additions, it's definitely going to improve us to build on last season. But I mean, the main players, really, I think that, you know, Brentford need to watch out for will be the likes of Philip, Justin Kluivert, David Brooks, Samanier. They're probably the main ones in terms from an attacking threat. But defensively, you know, we have got some good defenders in there now as well. So, but there'd be the front three from an attacking point of view that you guys probably need to keep a tab off. In terms of you guys beating us at your new stadium last season, and obviously we had a draw at our place. Brentford are a side that seem to, for me, I mean, I'm very, very intrigued by their manager. I think he's quite a special guy, to be honest, in terms of what he's achieved at Brentford. I was impressed with Brentford last year. I mean, I remember watching the Manchester United game at your home ground, and I know United probably weren't the best on their day, but I mean, Brentford tore them apart. So I've got to say I'm impressed with Brentford, and I think, like most teams in the league, Brentford can beat anybody on their day. And with the players that they've brought in, I know they've lost a few, but with the players that they've brought in, I think they will probably achieve the same as last season, if not go one step better. The players that are concerning for us, obviously, at the minute, you guys haven't got Ivan Toney, which is one player less for us to have to worry about, which is a good thing. I think the goalkeeper you've brought in is pretty decent, considering your keeper that you've sent out on loan to Arsenal. I thought he was outstanding, but I think you've replaced him well. Kevin Shade, is it? I believe his name is. He looks exciting, an exciting player to watch. Definitely, he does excite me. There's also like players like Rico Henry. I remember from the Championship season, he was a very, very decent player. And I mean, I'm not too sure if he's still in your squad these days, but I mean, if he is, he's definitely a cracking little player. There's also with the forward line, he plays mainly in midfield. I do forget his name. I know he wears, I think it's, is it number 9 he wears? I can't pronounce his name, but he's a cracking player as well. So there's quite a few in the squad that, you know, we've got to be very, very wary of when we approach the game. The game and the score prediction. I mean, the game, I think, for us, I think you're going to see a different Bournemouth side to what you've seen previously. You're going to see a bit more of an out-and-out attacking Bournemouth side. Yes, you know, there's chances we're going to get hit on the break. Totally. But, I mean, there'd be goals in the game. There'd definitely be goals in the game. To give it a score prediction. I mean, I've got to have some faith in the side. I mean, things are still gelling together. Like I've said, you know, it's exciting times for Bournemouth at the moment. So I'm going to back us with a draw, which is going to be a great result if we can turn that out against you guys. So I'm going to go with a 2-2 draw. In terms of the top four this season, I think the top four would consist of Arsenal, Man City, Liverpool and Man United. I just think that those teams are probably a little bit stronger than where maybe Chelsea are at the moment. I think with European football coming to Newcastle, that's gonna, it'd be interesting to see how that pans out with the whole Tuesday, Wednesday and then Sunday or Saturday game. It's gonna be interesting to see how they cope with that. So that's why I've picked those four. In terms of relegation, for me it's Sheffield United, Luton Town and Wolverhampton. Sheffield, I don't think they've done enough in the transfer window to strengthen. Luton are probably in a similar position to where Bournemouth were when we first come up, but I just can't see them staying up. They'll definitely give a fight, but I can't see them staying up. Wolverhampton, even before Gary O'Neill went there, I tipped them to go down, and I still tip them to go down with him there, because they've lost so much quality. I know they've had a result against Everton recently, but I just think long term that they will go down. But yeah, it's been a pleasure to be able to record this for you guys, and yeah, cheers from me.
Thanks to Matt from Up the Cherries for his insight into all that's happening down on the south coast at AFC Bournemouth. Charlie, where's your head at ahead of the weekend?
It's one of those games, Bournemouth, that I always go into it thinking we're absolutely going to chance them, but we never actually end up doing so. And it tends to be quite a cagey fixture. I might be completely wrong, but I think last time when we played them at home, we were actually quite lucky to get through it with a win. I think we got awarded quite a suspect penalty. And yeah, it's one of those games that I'd like to think we'll absolutely steamroll them, but I don't think we will. I think I agree with Mark. I think in terms of the way the game will go, it'll probably be quite similar to Palace. I think they'll be bang up for it. But yeah, it's about kind of trying to do the same again, get a nice early goal and then actually try and build on it. But yeah, I'm feeling positive. But I think, you know, I definitely don't underestimate Bournemouth. As you said there, they've got a lot of really good players. You know, it's the start of a new journey for them under a new manager, and then, you know, certainly not going to be a pushover. But yeah, I'm going into it positive and likelihood, I think we'll probably get the win.
With the help of Agent Mepham, I'm sure
exactly.
we can do that. So you go first. You go first, Charlie. Give us a score prediction.
I'm going to go very bold, and I'm going to say 3-1 Brentford. Sam Angodos hat trick.
Mark.
Sorry, composed myself after that. I think it will be tight. I'm going to say 2-1. Just wanted to mention David Brooks. He's first game back after cancer treatment for them in the Carabao Cup in midweek. So if he plays, that'd be a nice moment, I think. Good players there, good forwards. We know them well, right, from the playoffs. So I think 2-1. I think if we're on it, 2-1.
Yeah, I'm gonna copy you. 2-1 to us. But yeah, again, we have to be on it because, you know, you look at their fixtures, they'll probably be relieved to come to our place because it's the first winnable game they'll see. They've probably been, you know, fairly confident against West Ham, but it's a different West Ham this season to last. So they're probably like thinking it's a bit of a relief to come to our place, and, you know, they'll be confident of getting something out of it. Hopefully it's not 3 points, but they're more than capable of getting one, and they will win if we you know, we're not on our A game. So let's hope that doesn't happen. Well, I hope you've enjoyed tonight. It's been a really like varied one. You know, there's still a lot going on. As I said, we're recording this on Thursday with the transfer deadline that doesn't actually finish until tomorrow. If anything massively significant happens, I'll obviously we'll do an extra pod But hopefully we can get Bakayoko over the line, because he's obviously someone that we rate. And having looking at the clips and seeing some of the highlights against Rangers, he's someone that's going to, you know, put him in our team and give him the ball. He's going to cause havoc, and it's a very exciting forward lineup, I think, if we can add to what is already a very exciting attacking lineup. Anyway, so thanks to Mark and to Charlie for joining us tonight. Cheers, lads.
Thanks very much.
No problem. If you like what we do, don't forget to subscribe to Besotted on all good podcast channels. We'll be back straight after the game against AFC Bournemouth and do a post-match pod where I'll be speaking to fans outside the ground, inside the ground, and back at the Globe. Get yourself down to the Globe if you want a pre-match pint. I still think it's the best football pub in Brentford, and it's only a 15-minute walk to the new stadium. So get down there. The games are in on before and after the match. Really big beer garden. Really look after us well down there. So yeah, get yourself down to the Globe, and I'll see you next week. Come on, you bees!
Come on, you bees!
Come on, you bees! Brentford FC, come on, come on, you Brentford, come on, come on, you bees, come on, come on, you Brentford, come on, sit. The TalkSport Fan Network is proudly teaming up with Three for Mental Health Awareness Week this year. As football fans, we often pride ourselves on knowing everything, from which substitution can turn the game around to the quickest route home to beat the crowds. However, when it comes to discussing feelings with our friends, we might not always feel as confident. That's why we're here to equip you with the right tools so you can reach out to those who can help. If your mates are struggling, let them know that the Samaritans are free to call on 116 123. That's 116 123. They are there to listen without judgment or pressure, 24/7, 365 days of the year. Let's all take a moment to talk more than football.
Away days are great, but there's nothing quite like playing at home. The same goes for McDonald's. Maximize your home ground advantage with McDelivery. Order now on the McDonald's app. At participating restaurants, 18 plus, serving times, delivery fee and terms apply. See mcdonalds.com.
This podcast is proud to be part of the TalkSport Fan Network. TalkSport. Powered by fans.